Chapter 29. Jesse was having a scotch with his favorite but least talkative drinking companion, Ozzie Smith. Ozzie existed in suspended animation, his body parallel to the infield as he dived to snatch a line drive out of midair. The poster of Ozzie, frozen in time and space, had survived many moves with Jesse, though Jesse had never given a lot of thought to why he dragged the Wizard of Oz around with him from house to house. Sure, Jesse liked to talk to Ozzie occasionally, raise his glass to him. Jesse would sometimes brag about his arm to Ozzie. "I would never have had your range, but I had a better arm, Oz. I had a monster arm, a cannon." Sometimes Jesse thought Ozzie understood him better than anyone, better than Dix or Sonny or even Molly. Certainly better than Jen, better than himself. When he went to pour himself another, he realized that between his time with Jim Penworth and Kayla and Dee, and now here, he'd had quite a bit to drink. Jesse had stopped beating himself up over his drinking, but he hadn't stopped keeping track of it. There was one time a few years back when he'd just lost it one day and drank himself into oblivion. The next morning he was still so many sheets to the wind that he'd been forced to blow off work. Molly and Suit covered for him, and there'd been no fallout over it. Yet that day stuck in his head like the point of a thumbtack. Two mobbed-up guys had been murdered in Paradise, so it was about the worst possible time for Jesse to go off the deep end. The thing was, it wasn't the killings that set Jesse off. It was about two beautiful women, twins, Roberta and Rebecca Bankston. They had triggered Jesse's meltdown. As he held the rectangular bottle of Black Label in his right hand, contemplating his next drink, he thought about Kayla and Dee. Jesse put the bottle down. One more drink and clear thought would be lost to him. He wanted to think clearly, needed to. What were Kayla and Dee doing here, really? Mostly he wanted to know about what they were doing here now. And what was it about Dee, who'd been a nearly perfect companion during his brief time in New York City, that now seemed a bit off? He turned back to Ozzie and asked him, "So, Oz, you got any ideas about Dee?" Ozzie gave the same answer he always gave, silence. "Come on, Oz. Even Dix gave me feedback every once in a while." But Ozzie was nothing if not consistent in the field and in his zen-like silence. As it happened, Ozzie wouldn't have got the chance to change his ways, had he been so inclined. First there were the dancing shadows cast by headlights against the walls of Jesse's house. Then came the telltale grousing and ripples of tires against the rough road surface outside his house. A car door slammed. Shoes, women's shoes, clickety-clacked along the walk. A bell rang. A hand rapped the wooden door. Jesse pulled back the door. He bowed his head slightly. "Dee, aren't you going to invite me in?" "Give me a minute to think about it." She punched Jesse in the right arm. "Time's up, darling." "Then I guess I better invite you in." Dee stepped close to him, stood on her toes, and kissed him softly on the lips. She kicked off her gray slingbacks and strolled past him. She was dressed in tight jeans, but not the kind they sold at Old Navy. These were expensive jeans that showed off what you had and hid what you didn't. That second benefit was wasted on Dee. There wasn't much she didn't have. She wore a lightweight periwinkle sweater that made her eyes almost glow blue. The sweater's neckline plunged just enough to show off the tanned and slightly freckled skin of her upper breasts and the cleavage between them. She smelled great, too. Her perfume was more peppery than Kayla's and was put on with a gentler hand. "Make yourself at home," Jesse said, though it seemed a moot point. She'd already walked past him and found the bar. "You mind if I make myself a drink?" "No." "Want one?" "Sorry, I've passed my limit," he said. "But you're the chief of police, and this is your house." "A short one, then. Plenty of ice and soda." Dee poured two drinks. They clinked glasses and sipped. "So," Jesse said, "how'd you find this place?" "Magic," she laughed and drank some more. "I wanted to see you by myself. When we were together in New York, well, I kind of felt cheated when you left so suddenly." "Murder trumps sex," he said. even incredible sex. She smiled that neon smile and then turned it off. I know I sound selfish and that you're in the middle of this horrible thing, but I haven't enjoyed being with a man like that in a very long time. She drank a little more and came very close to him. With his face cool and serious, he said, "You mean I wasn't your first?" Then the corners of his mouth curled up slightly. Suddenly, with her standing so near, the questions he had about her seemed to vanish. She nestled her head against his chest. "If it makes you feel more special, you were my first chief of police." "That works for me." He put his drink down, lifted her face by the chin, and kissed her hard on the mouth. At first, she just let him kiss, and then kissed him back with equal verve. When they stopped, they were both breathing heavily. They stared into each other's eyes for a few seconds. Jesse wasn't sure about what she had seen in his eyes, and he was even less sure about what he had seen in hers. It was strange, he knew, but he felt as if he could only see so far into her. That at some point the blueness of her eyes became an opaque barrier. "You may see into me just so far, Jesse Stone, and not an inch more." There were those questions again, only they didn't matter at the moment. "Show me around the rest of your place," she said.
"Where would you like me to start?"
She kissed him softly again.
"Your bedroom seems like an awfully good place to begin the tour."
He grabbed her hand. "It's a big house," he said.
"Don't worry, darling. We can get up early in the morning and finish the tour."
Jesse led her to the bedroom.